It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio on this very glorious Saturday morning. A little chill in the air. It's just about perfect if you want to do anything outside. I hope they're having the same luck continuing up in Augusta, where things are also quite interesting. Got some old-timers making a splash in the Masters. Yeah, this was kind of an almost thing on Friday. If you're into golf a bit and have been for 100 years, Freddie Couples broke par on Thursday. He did miss the cut yesterday, unfortunately, and I watched a bit of it. His putting stroke just left him on Friday. But he broke par at age of 65. The last time he broke par at the Masters was 42 years ago.
Wow.
That's quite a dry spell, I would think, for a guy who's played a lot of them. Anyway, it's shaping up to be a really fun weekend, and it's just one of my favorite events of the year. And it's pretty out, and that always reminds me, too, because the course is so pretty, and it's pretty around here. And it's just a really good time to live in the South, in my opinion. But I digress. Anyway, welcome to all the regulars. We depend on you so we can keep things going. As long as you show up, we will. We're having a good time and hopefully disseminating some good information. If you're new to the show, whether you found it on purpose or by accident, try to listen for the whole hour and something will come up of interest. We will talk a lot about what we want to talk about, unless you pick up the telephone and dial 904-222-8255, at which time we will switch over and talk about what you'd like to talk about. There is plenty to talk about, believe me. If you are radio shy and would rather get an answer to a question, you can always email us at it's info@StrivusWealth. No,
is that that's right. .com. Yep.
Okay. STR. Strivus is, of course, the parent company of this show and the operating company day to day in our day jobs as financial planners. STRIVUSWealth.com, and we will have your emails answered by next week's show. So, or of course directly to you or on air about next week's show. All that said, the market is bound and determined, it appears, to make a liar out of me. Because last week I said I was pretty darn sure that things could not get any crazier in the market than they already were.
Yeah.
Not so much the case.
Not so much, exactly. And you'll notice that I'm here today, so obviously the market was up because I have Joey come in on the weeks where it's really bad news. So that's my new strategy.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, I thought so. This is another in a long line of lessons on why doing something when the market falls is almost always a mistake. If you sold last week, or you sold on Monday, or you sold on Tuesday, you would have missed one of the top 10 best market days of all time. Mm-hmm. And it was. I don't ever remember a day that good.
Do you remember years ago when I was just getting into this, and I think I had you read a book. The guy's name is Nick Murray. He's an excellent writer. He did the treatise on asset allocation and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I recommend that book all the time.
Good. Nick Murray said something once that I'll never forget. He said, at times like this, here's the best advice you can get. Don't just do something. Stand there.
I like it.
Yep.
Yeah, and it really is true. There's just no way you could have predicted anything that happened this week. It was wildly volatile, and it was all surrounding the tariff, the retaliatory tariffs, and then they put a pause on the tariffs, and that's what really boosted the market on Wednesday. And the most interesting thing to follow out of all of this is that the U.S. and China trading relationship is arguably the most important trading relationship in the world. It is incredibly high volume in dollars moving back and forth, and right now, we have a tariff of about 145% on them, and they have something similar on us, and it's basically at a standoff, and nobody knows what's going to happen next. Most people that we've spoken to believe that what Trump is doing is necessary. Whether or not they believe it's correct is the or the way that he's going about it. That one is very much up for debate. But pretty much everyone has said, well, yeah, we had to do something. The fact is, China's known for being a bad actor. They steal technology. They tariff items coming into their own country. They dump commodities into other markets around the world to keep prices stable in their own country. They manipulate their currency. They have a terrible record on human rights abuses, and they're allied with Russia and Iran. Is this the trading partner that you want to be dependent on when World War III breaks out? I would say no. So really, I think all of this is about reestablishing our relationship with China and reshoring some of those critical manufacturing type plants like pharmaceuticals. Apparently, we don't even make a single antibiotic in the U.S. anymore, something like that.
Thank the lawyers.
Yep. And then obviously the military, we need to be able to build boats, ships, planes, all of that, missiles here. And so I think that that's really when you try and unpack what's happening right now, I believe that to be the ultimate goal. Is it messy? Absolutely. Is it being done the right way? I don't know. I don't know what the right way is, but that is why you're seeing this craziness go on right now.
Yeah, with respect to China, a wise old man once said, and another wise old man quoted him frequently, the latter being me, when the only situation that's untenable is the status quo, do something. And that's where we were with China, and everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. If you let this go on status quo forever, China will eat our lunch and they will own us. And that's that. Bob from the farm. Bob, I've only got 1 minute, and I know we're going to want to talk to you just a little bit longer because I know your interest in things, and this is quite a week to talk. So if you don't mind, I'll pick up the call as soon as we come back. And if you're paying attention, I'll have a trivia question, and that way you get a shot at that too. So I appreciate it. Carry on.
So it was just, as I mentioned, just another week of extreme volatility in both directions. We saw a huge up day on Wednesday, a big down day on Thursday, and then a really strong close on Friday. And the net of all that, besides a VIX reading between 30 and 60, was a gain of 5% on the Dow, 5.7% on the S&P, and 7.3% on the NASDAQ. So nothing's settled yet, but the losses for this month or this quarter, they look a lot more subdued than they did just a few days ago. And that it looks more like 3.3% down on the NASDAQ, 4.4% on the S&P. So for the year, NASDAQ still down double digits, but the other indexes are down by less than 10%. So not too much damage there.
Now, the good news on the NASDAQ is it goes up faster than the Dow or the S&P
sure does.
Too. So if things do start coming back, they might wind up just fine. All right, lots more to come. Don't go anywhere. We've got to take a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, usually brought to you by, I forgot to do this last week, so doing credit, by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Paul at 904-636-7888. But today only, we're sponsored by a loyal fan of the show. I believe her name is Karen, who just in the last 2 minutes dropped off the fair tax book, which we discussed on air last week. And she mentioned that she and her husband had a big supply of these things. I said, well, if you want to donate one to the show, we'll use it as the trivia prize this week, and somebody else will get introduced to it. Well, much to my surprise, when she delivered the fair tax book, she also included a copy of Fair Tax the Truth, which was the rebuttal to all the naysayers. And it really clarifies a lot of things that arose from the total uniqueness, I guess, of the fair tax book, and had a lot of people left with questions. And there was one guy in particular, and I'll guarantee you he's mentioned in the second book, who just turned on this thing. Everybody knows his name too, but he used every tactic in the book to besmirch the fair tax system. And if this does anything toward helping the revival, I appreciate it very much. So thanks for your direct delivery and attention to all this and just overall generosity. So here we go. Back to the phones, as we promised. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Great. Thanks for waiting, by the way.
No problem.
That's, I did the trivia introduction. I didn't tell you the question.
Nope.
No, you didn't. No.
Just so you could take a chance at it, too. What percentage of Americans think that the amount of income tax they pay is fair? Just a whole number between 1 and 100.
I'll say 31%.
Good. That's bracketing for us. It's a little low, but
okay.
It helps everybody who follows. So carry on. Anyway, what's up today?
Hey, I was watching an interview last night with Warren Buffett, and they asked Warren Buffett what he thought about tariffs. And he said it's an act of war. And my response to Warren Buffett is, we didn't fire the first shot.
Exactly. You know, a whole bunch of what Warren Buffett says, most people who think like we do can disagree with. We can't argue with him. As I said, you don't have to like him to admire him. He is obviously very successful. But one thing he said that Joey brought up, actually, when we were talking to a client recently, I said, my favorite Buffett quote is, you buy when there's blood in the streets. And Joey countered that with another Buffett that somebody asked him, do you think you're so successful because you're smarter than everybody else? And he said, no, I think we're so successful because we're not as dumb as everybody else. There you go.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Hey, I was doing my, I was looking at my portfolio and prior to our getting together and, you know, you're talking about staying invested and because you'd missed the boat. Let me tell you, the other part of that is having a well thought out portfolio in among many diverse classes of investments and diversification within each of those classes. Our portfolio was hardly touched that much with this downturn, and you know we're well poised for the upside, and I thank you guys for that. So, you know, that's the big thing. That's my big message. Is you guys have done a great job. So well,
the idea is to not lose as much as everybody else does,
exactly.
Because when the market recovers and it starts to float all the boats, your boat floats first, and most, and it's just that simple. Try to minimize your losses, and there's only one way that's ever been shown to do it, and that is to do exactly what you just said, diversify.
And, you know, Adam was talking about building boats again. If you just took the United States, and one of the things I did some research on, if you took the United States and Canada, you know, Canada on top of the U.S., if just imagine a barbell with the two weights on either side. On the one side, you've got Alaska. On the other side, you have Greenland. We have two coasts. We have two icebreakers, actually, for the United States military, and they're operated by the Coast Guard. Russia has 50, and many of them are nuclear, and China is developing many. The polar ice cap and the, you know, the North Pole and the South Pole are going to be strategic in us being able to defend ourselves, and that's I think that's why Trump's after Greenland. So.
I think you're right.
And we've got to build icebreakers, for
but
sure.
You know what? A couple of observations. One, when we had talked about this the other day just a little bit, that night on the news, somebody brought it up about whole icebreaker thing. And I had just had to sit there and chuckle because it was so timely. And the other part is, I wonder, this is me going kind of all crazy, I wonder if the reason that we don't have icebreakers is because we were so sure that by now there wouldn't be a polar ice cap.
Maybe.
You're environmentalist, sir.
I'm being just a little facetious, but not all that much.
You better give him a happy pill over there, Adam, and straighten him out. He's on the environment. water, not a lot.
We got a supply of red pills to pass around. Right. Yeah, but and as I mentioned to you the other day, Trump announced, and I haven't had time to investigate this yet, but Trump announced, I think it was in the not quite the State of the Union speech, that one of the things he was going to establish was a Department of Shipbuilding somewhere outside of Washington, D.C., because we don't build ships anymore.
We really don't.
No, we don't.
We don't have to.
That's the problem. The Navy is falling way behind.
Yep. So, and look at the shrinking size of our Navy and the growing size of the Chinese Navy. And if that doesn't scare you, you're just flat out not paying attention.
No, no. Well, I enjoy the show and the conversation, gentlemen. We are headed into town. So you guys have a great rest of your weekend and the Masters, and we'll be listening.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Always fun to hear from you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How's everybody?
Absolutely wonderful. And you?
I'm hanging in there, hanging in there.
That's all we can ask.
You were talking about the Chinese. It's interesting. They were showing their latest fighter jet. It's called the J-36. It's a tailless plane. It has no tail. They are a formidable adversary. So, and yes. I was listening to the joint commanders in the Indo-Pacific region talking the other day. We're going to have to be ever so vigilant.
You're exactly right.
And yeah.
They will spend money like there's no tomorrow to get what they want by the time they want to get there.
That's very true. Very true. Very true. And we can't fall asleep.
No.
I'll take a quick shot at the trivia.
Yes.
I'm going to say 46%.
Somebody's really deft on the keyboard, I know. And that somebody is you. Yes, it is 46%. The let's see, it fell from a high. This is kind of interesting given the discussion we've just been having today. The peak of the population saying that the taxes were fair came in World War II, and it peaked at 90% said it was fair.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that tells us pretty much what we need to know.
Yeah.
Excellent. We will get it to you. Do you have the fair tax book?
I once read a fair tax book by Neil Bortz.
Yes, that's the one. I won't then send this one to you because you've read it. So we'll do the Paul Lloyd version for you this time.
And that's very generous of you.
Actually,
I've got
another way to maybe do the book thing. So I'll get to that right after the next break. Okay, we appreciate the call, Mike. You have a great weekend.
Absolutely. You gentlemen have a great weekend, too.
Great. If you're a golf fan, enjoy it. Yeah, it is interesting that some of the little things in the study that was, where did I get this, from Investment News, the number of people who say that their taxes are fair at 46%, 50% don't think they're fair, which leaves 4% who don't think, apparently.
Who have no opinion on the subject.
Right. I don't know how they do that. But the interesting part is that it's only about 51 or 2% of Americans that actually pay any income tax.
Mm-hmm.
And how could you not think that's fair if you're one of them?
I don't know.
Or maybe that's the only people who do think it's
maybe
fair.
Maybe it is.
I don't know. But, you know, for decades, there's been an ongoing sample of Americans informally that every time it's tried, when Americans are asked what should be the maximum tax rate, it comes out at 25%.
Wait, before we pick up that call, we only have about a minute
left.
Yeah, let's do it on the other side.
It looks like Mick. Please bear with us because we have to go to break right now, and then we'll take your call immediately after that. So don't think we're going to slight you. That won't happen. Anyway, that with respect to the amount that we think, that about 54% said that the middle income earners pay too much. I think that's the group that has the best handle on all of this. if you consider the middle income earners, the ones that are right above the, yes, we do pay, I think from there on up, it gets a little carried away for the tax rate. So just my observation. I thought everybody might like it. Anyway, we do need to take a break here, and we'll be back. I've got another sort of unusual question for people and a bunch of other stuff. So don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. That was Mike calling back, and we already had his information, so I do not need to go there immediately. So we will turn back to, here's my fake question of the day. This doesn't get you anything, but I asked Adam, what's the best way to get a bill through Congress? And the answer, apparently this week, was vote while a vacation is looming and the planes are about to take off to go home, because that's how we got the House of Representatives to pass the budgetary framework that the Senate has done. Why is that important to everybody out there? Because that means that TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, tax rates that were implemented on January 1st of 2018 are going to be made permanent, because that is the number one objective of the bill they're doing now. Should be signed into law, we hope, once they get the wrangling done by the end of May. And if that happens, we will then have clear sailing for tax planning for a long, long time. Also in that process, you're probably going to see some other things. Trump really hung a lot of his gravitas, political capital, on no tax on tips. I think that'll be the first thing that goes in there, because the other side also promised that once they heard it and was such a good idea. And there'll be a couple other things, too. Adam pointed out something very important, too, that the tax rates for a married couple, the way they stand right now, up to almost $100,000.
Yeah, just under $96,950.
They pay 12%. Both Adam and I believe that that's an extremely fair thing.
It's, and that's
after that, it jumps.
That's only from $23,850. Below that, they pay 10%. So it's you know, that seems, if you have to have income taxes, making almost $100,000 and paying only up to 12%, that puts your effective tax rate at, like, I don't know, 7-8%.
You don't get IRMA'd at that level either.
Right.
So IRMA, for those who don't know, the income-related monthly adjustment amounts, it's an income tax on Medicare Part B payments and Part D payments. So we agree that the tax code is sitting right now very fair up to about that level. From there on in, I think it gets kind of wildly out of hand. That's why I like the flat tax or the fair tax so much better. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up the rest of the market.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about bonds. We saw bond yield surge this week, which was kind of annoying, I guess. The price of bonds dropped about 2.4%. And if you were on longer, like long treasuries, you were down 6.5%. Shorter-term notes were off just 0.3%, but so a lot of movement in the bond market recently, and yields have just been bouncing like crazy too. You typically don't see bond yields move like they have over the last few weeks, but again, it all goes back to the uncertainty around what's going to happen next in that market.
Yeah, you think of equities as being very volatile and bonds being boring, volatile over time. Day to day, that's weird.
Mm-hmm. Another thing we saw was precious metals continuing to surge. Silver was up 7.8% this week, and gold was up 6.5%. That was not the case with the overall commodities market, which was dead flat, 0% movement, and oil fell just over 2%, back down around 60-ish, and that's due to concerns of slowdown in trade with China and the U.S. and global recession potential. So just really, if there's a market, it's moving pretty fast right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of whiners out there talking about the price of oil now and say, you know, when drillers won't be able to make any money if it's down under 60. And I said, yeah, you know what? That's called supply and demand. It's a self-correcting problem. If it gets too low, then something happens. If it gets too high, something else happens. Don't worry about it. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
What's happening?
Thank you and your profession for teaching people to be diverse. I think that's the one thing I think everybody should be very well reminded this past week. My question for you is, each person that I listen to on the subject of China that is really focused on it, like Gordon Chang and others like that, they seem to be talking more and more about China has a real financial problem going on right now, and it's getting worse.
Yes.
What do you know about that, or what has your education been on that?
I follow it like you do, partly through people like Gordon. And yes, they've had a serious problem. Remember, in the early days of us doing this show, we talked a lot about how China builds entire cities and storefronts, high rises, the whole thing. And then they put a 16-lane road up to the city. And one day they cut the ribbon and cars flow in and they populate the city. That's how fast they were bringing people out of the rural poverty into the cities. Well, they kept doing this. And then one day they cut the ribbon and no one came. And all of the builders and developers in China looked at it and scratched their heads and say, what do we do? Do you remember the name of that real estate outfit?
Evergreen, I think.
Yeah. That went into terrible bad times. And it was indicative of what their entire economy was doing. It basically stopped for a while. It paused for a while. And with all that money outstanding and no way to get it back, they've really started to hurt. So now they're using economic stimulus there big time. And you know what happens when that happens? That causes inflation.
It does.
So what we're doing right now, we're trying to gain the upper hand, striking while the iron is hot. That's my opinion. What's your view on it, Marshall?
Well, I trust those people I'm hearing in the current administration, because there's some really smart people working on this. And I think if we twist their arm enough, China's going to be able to have to sit back. Either one or two things. They're going to have to sit back and say, we can't push this any further. Or two, all those guys sitting in that room are going to throw Xi out.
There are smart enough people. I don't know if you saw the cabinet meeting this week, but I've never seen a group of brains sitting around the White House table like this group. They're fantastic. But the people in the negotiating field and the people at the State Department, so on, they understand one thing. We have to beat Xi, but we have to allow him to save face, because over there, that is 100% of everything. If you don't save face, you're out. So they have to do this little tap dance to, if they want to keep Xi around, and I don't know that they do or not. I could make an argument either way, the devil you know or the devil you don't know, so to speak. But they do know what they're doing, I believe, and they both sides announced this is it now. They said it's not going any higher. Both sides said that. That's step one to saving face the way I see it. Then we got to start negotiating. But that, I don't think it'll happen until we have 4, 5, 6, 10 maybe other deals done. And then I think China's going to realize that if we don't hurry up, it's going to be too late. Just my impression. Agree or not?
Well, I'm looking very much forward to that external revenue service.
Yes, me too. And Sarah asked me the other day, how does that work? And I said, well, I bet a lot of it is through the Bank of International Settlements. She said, we have a Bank of International Settlements? Why don't I know about that? I said, there's no reason to. I wouldn't know, yep. Except I'm in this business and I read a lot about it. The ERS, I just love the sound of that.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for keeping us educated. Appreciate it.
Marshall, always fun. Thank you. In fact, I was just going to talk about you. Have a good weekend. Marshall, last week we ran out of time, and for those of you who are loyal listeners, you'll remember this. Angela Walker was talking about the home title lock thing, and the conclusion that they were drawing was, yeah, you really should do this. And I have always said, no, you don't need to. And the reason I know that is because Marshall, I don't know, 2-3 years ago maybe, called in one day when we were talking about these things. And he told us that most of the counties around here have a service at the Register of Deeds office whereby you can sign up for free. And if anything tries to happen on your home title, you will be notified before they do anything. And I subsequently looked it up, found it, did it. We talked about it several times on air. All of the surrounding counties, I don't know how many in general in Florida have it, but everybody that's within reasonable earshot of our voices here knows that you can do that. So the real question is one or the other sufficient? And if the answer to that is yes, is it the free one that's sufficient, or is it the paid one that's sufficient, or would it be smarter to do both? And that's my question, not to anybody except me. And my answer to that is the free service is sufficient. You shouldn't need to pay for home title lock. Clark Howard agrees with me, by the way. And for those of you who know Clark, it's not just that he's cheap, because he also is very protective of his and our resources. So if Clark and I are right in your own mind, don't worry about home title lock. If we aren't, then check it out and maybe buy it if you'll feel better. So that's my opinion on the subject. And I can be swayed or educated by anybody who has more to say about it. But as it sits right now, I wouldn't pay for it. And I don't, by the way. I do have some of the other things, but not that. So when we come back, more on the market, Adam, or just shall we go into topics?
Yeah, I mean, we can wrap up with international and a few other things, but just for a minute.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. One last break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I was just chuckling. I'll have Adam tell you why.
Yeah. I just got a Wall Street Journal alert that says smartphones, laptops, and other electronics will be exempt from Trump's sweeping tariffs on China. And I just had to chuckle because that sounds like Tim Cook got in Trump's ear somehow.
Cook's come a long ways from the days where Trump referred to him as Tim Apple. See, guys, just play ball. Zuckerberg just bought a $23 million mansion in D.C. Things are changing.
Interesting.
And I listened to Bill Maher this morning talking about his visit with Trump and Kid Rock. And if his viewers don't leave him on this, I'll be shocked. And he didn't say anything wrong. He just said, here's what happened.
Yeah.
We talked about anything. And he started it out. I made this list of things Trump has said, you know, stupid and all this stuff. And I showed it to him and asked him to sign it. And he held it up and turned it around. Trump signed it, and his legendary signature right across. Nobody understands the sense of humor in this guy unless they themselves have one.
Yeah.
And there aren't enough of those. And Bill Maher does have a sense of humor.
Yeah, he's been quite reasonable lately. During the first term, he got way overboard.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah, he's willing to call the baby ugly nowadays. There aren't enough of those people.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anything else going on and you want to look forward? Or?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things worth mentioning. Foreign stocks rallied with U.S. indices this week, and emerging markets were up just 2.1%. The rest of the market, like the rest of the world, was up 4.5%. Some of that was China, which actually only ended up the week down less than 1%, and it rallied into Friday, which was surprising to me.
That is very surprising.
Yeah, I thought so as well. Also, it's earnings season. Who would have known, because there's so much other news, but really? We saw Delta Airlines kick it off and they beat their estimated earnings. But they also said that growth has just stalled in their industry.
Did you see why though?
Government travel.
Yeah, government travel business is way off. Hallelujah.
We also saw Wells Fargo and JP Morgan. They both beat their earnings estimate. And right now, the market isn't really trading on earnings news very much, but we hope to get back to that at some point. So it's good to see a few beats to start the season off right.
Forward-looking PEs are falling dramatically, too. And if if we start gaining some wins on the earnings reports, that certainly can't hurt anything.
Yep. I think it was noteworthy to talk a little bit about CPI and PPI this week. The producer price index in particular came in a decline of 0.4%. That's a really substantial number.
The expectation was positive, what, 0.2? 0.2, like
yep. Producer prices are still up 2.7% versus a year ago, but that is a substantial decrease in the PPI.
That's actually what we've been saying lately.
Yeah.
This has started to happen.
I've said several times that I think the government is overestimating inflation right now. And we saw the CPI also declined, but 0.1% in March. And so
also was expected to rise.
Yep. It was a consensus 0.1% increase. And so we saw both of those decline, which was interesting. That was the first time since pre-COVID that the CPI has declined, which is incredible.
Yeah. Your favorite website and mine now, Trueflation, says year over year, 1.4%.
Is that where I'm looking it up right now to see where it's at today? But yeah, it's been 1.7-ish.
This next Fed meeting could go dramatically different than I thought. I figured June for a decrease. I would not rule out May for a decrease. Now, based on these things, the energy prices dropping substantially, a lot of food prices starting to drop, all those things are going to play into this.
Yeah, so, 1.53% today.
Yeah, and that's right within their range.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really not seeing the inflation when I go shopping that I was a couple of years ago, where it was just incredible. Every time you went to the store, things were 10% higher than they were the day before.
And rents are playing ball also.
Yep.
All good news for those of us who need those things, I guess. I don't want rates to fall as much as most people do, and neither does Adam,
because no.
we're earning good money for us and our clients on money market rates. But we could stand a little improvement in certain things like mortgage rates. I would like to see the 10-year rate get down a little bit so that bonds were back to growing again in value.
I mean,
I want a lot of things.
There's still a lot of things that are a little out of whack. They're not as out of whack as they were 2 years ago, but yeah, there's still some things that need to correct. And all of this, it can be directly traced back to what's happened over the last 4 years. COVID, our response to COVID, our wild spending of money in 2022, just printing money like crazy, and then the reaction to that and the Fed raising rates.
Yeah, I think another part of this budgetary agreement that's going on right now, I think part of that is going to be clawbacks from unspent money. Biden tried to spend a lot of money on the last few days, but there's still some of it, and a lot of it was from the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which was anything but that. And whatever has not been spent, I think, will be drawn back in, added to the savings. And that's just going to help the overall inflationary picture, too. So I am certainly not the harbinger of gloom and doom as far as the economy goes. Some people seem to be missing the point, among them Larry Summers. Those of you who are old enough probably remember he was the Treasury Secretary for Clinton, went on to become the president of Harvard, and he got his butt kicked out of there for discussing the fact that we should talk about whether males or females are better at science. He didn't say they were. He said, we should talk about this, and they fired him for that.
Wow.
He's also the one that said during COVID with the Inflation Reduction Act and so on, that's highly inflationary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he thinks that tariffs are going to cause the market to crash.
Ironically, I was just listening to a podcast that he was on my way in today, and he is definitely in that camp. And, I don't disagree with him if I thought the end result of the tariffs was the tariffs, but I don't believe that. The
tariff is a vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, if you arrive at your destination, does it matter if you took a bus or a car or an airplane or whatever? Tariffs are a vehicle to fair trade. And I've done how many mea culpas on my old feelings about NAFTA, because I was such a big supporter. I don't think any of us really knew that free trade was not fair trade.
That is true. But the fact is, like, this argument, one thing that I have a hard time with is that the argument that the middle class is dead, I don't believe that. If you look over the last 30 years, the middle class in this country has basically stayed the same. I mean, maybe it hasn't grown as much as we would have liked, but people right now have better lives than they ever have. And part of that is access to cheap goods from overseas. So I don't think that it's necessarily a complete negative, but maybe we took it too far.
Not very likely. But another thing we've talked about endlessly over the last 10, 11 years, 12 years, whatever we've been in business together, is that the difference in, I'm using the microcosm, being the Jacksonville area. When we came down here, we moved down in 1992, one of my first observations was this town is lacking that solid middle class.
Yeah.
People making between, at that time, about $50,000 and $100,000.
It definitely seemed that way.
But now we see $80,000 to $190,000 all over the place.
Yeah, I remember thinking when I graduated from college that I can't go back to Jacksonville because I have to take a job making way too little money. Yeah. So I found a job in Cincinnati and then I moved to Atlanta. But in those cities seem to have more of that young professional middle class. But now I don't feel that way at all. I feel like Jacksonville is not like that. It's much more income and job opportunity diverse than it was back then.
And I never hesitate to say that I do think that being awarded the Jaguar franchise was the first step in turning this into
certainly helped, yeah,
an economic powerhouse. Yeah, if you're out there knocking down 80, 100, 120, 150, 250, like so many people we see, you're not upper class, but you're sure living well.
Yeah, exactly. Especially by today, we are. People in the U.S. have it better than anyone anywhere in the history of the world right now.
Yep.
And so that's that. When I think about like all the arguments that all the damage that's been done by NAFTA and Chinese goods, it's like you can make that argument, sure. But you can also make an argument that we have it like we've done a pretty good job of making our citizens very comfortable over the last 30 years.
And the state has changed in complexion. There's been some awfully smart people running it, and it shows. And it's just been desirable for a whole bunch of reasons. I could not be happier that we made that move so long ago. That's the truth. Now, speaking of such things, let's compare that to L.A. I didn't have to say a word more, did I?
Nope.
I'll do this one as an example. L.A. passed a new 0.25% sales tax, ostensibly to raise funds for services to the homeless. So it went into effect. It went from 9.5% to 9.75%.
Unreal.
To prevent homelessness, which is increasing. And now these people say, I didn't vote for that. And I'll tell them, I'll look them right in the eye and tell them, but your neighbor did.
Mm-hmm.
I love it here. What can you say? All right. Unfortunately, we got to run. This flew by. Thanks to all the callers and all the ideas. It's so much more fun when people start sharing. That's why we do the show live. That's why we always do the show live. And we just don't ever miss. And you shouldn't either. So thanks for listening. See you next week, same time. This is the Family Financial Hour.